an impressive and grateful recovered alcoholic by the name of Barry.
Hi, Barry.
And by the grace of God, the teachings and writings of the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since May the 12th, 2001. You know, and for me, that's pretty incredible, because it's, you know, it's the longest period in my life that I haven't hurt myself or hurt anybody else through my drinking and through my substance abuse. You know, there's a lot of things that make up who I became, and there's a lot of things that are happening today that make me who I'm becoming in the future. And a lot of that has to do with the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, working the program, talking to my sponsor, and being a helping hand to the Fellowship of AA, and helping other people get sober. And there are times it's very trying, and it's very, very humbling at the same time. Because no matter who's put in my path, they're all my teachers. And I learn something from everybody that's crossed my path in this fellowship. And that's one of the things I realized over the last couple of years, that I can't stop learning, and I can't stop helping myself grow. Because if I start to rest on what I've done so far, then I haven't accomplished much. And my home group is Saturday Morning Come As You Are. It's a discussion meeting on in NDG. And I do about anywhere between four, well, in the summertime it's about four meetings a week, but during when the weather gets cold, it's between four and seven, depending. Sometimes on a Saturday I'll see myself doing three meetings, sometimes Sunday two. But generally, almost every second day I'm at a meeting, you know, and it's something that I still enjoy doing. You know, I see a lot of people come and go in this fellowship, and I see a lot of people go out and hurt themselves, you know. And I'm very grateful to be sober today. You know, in the last month and a half, I've known six people that have gone, and I've decided to go back out and expand their stories. And, you know, one of them was one of my sponsees. And luckily, he came back, you know, the next day. Or the day after. You know, some people go back out and they never come back. Some people go out and they die. You know, that's the reality of that. You know, that's the reality of this disease, of alcoholism. And tell you a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in the east end of Montreal. I came from a good Newfie stock. And I grew up in a family where drinking was socially acceptable. Everyone drank. The people that my parents associated with drank. And most of my buddies that I hang around with the parents of the children of the parents that my parents hung around with, and we grew up together, you know, and we started partying together, you know, and I started drinking around 13, 14, and I really started seriously drinking when I quit school at 15 and started working a job, and when I was 16 going to 17, I joined the Canadian Armed Forces Reserves. And I spent the summer of 1979 in Ottawa. And that's where my drinking and my partying really, really flourished. You know, and I learned a couple of things when I was in the Army. I learned how to hurt people. I learned how to drink. And drink I did. You know, and a typical day for me at the famous CFB Rockcliffe was I'd wake up around 5:20 in the morning, run a mile and a half, do half-hour calisthenics, usually throw up what I drank the night before, go to the mess hall, have breakfast. Either I'm on parade at Parliament Hill or I'm on sentry duty at the Governor General's house. And once my day is over, we'll get back to the barracks, we hit the mess hall, then we're off into going to downtown Ottawa, going to a couple of nice little places, you know, like Molly Maguire's and stuff like that. And then once we close the bars in Ottawa, we get on the Midnight Express and we go over partying Gatineau till 3:30 in the morning, come back around 4:30, pass out, wake up, and start my day all over again. And that was like my summer of 69. That was my coming out party. Yeah, I was 17. I'm going on 18. I'm a boy in a man's body, and I'm immature. And I really thought I knew how I had the world by the short and curlies. And I had an attitude problem. And a lot of people tried to give me an attitude adjustment, and I basically told them where to go. And I said, if you don't like what I'm doing and don't like the way I'm playing and partying, well, you can take the next train out. You know, not in those nice terms. And there's a lot of colorful words I used to throw in on top of that. I've been trying to work on that too. You know, I used to, every second word is F you and sideways and your mama. And because that's all I knew. You know, I grew up in taverns. Most of my drinking was in taverns and bars and strip joints. You know, there was a lot of fun in my early drinking, you know, my teens up into my early 20s. And then by the time I got to about 25, 26, I found a magic elixir that a few alcoholics have found. And that enabled me to drink more, enabled me to party longer, enabled me to really hurt myself a hell of a lot more. And I believe it brought me to the rooms a lot quicker than I ever thought it'd be. Because I didn't really think I had a problem. I just knew I drank differently from my friends. You know, and you know, and from the time of about 26 to about 36, 37, you know, those were some pretty insane years, you know. Going on 3, 4, 5 day binges, spending every cent I had, borrowing money so I can go to work, borrowing money so I can eat, borrowing money so I can do all kinds of things. And, you know, along the way I started selling so I could maintain my party. And in those 10 years, 10, 11 years from about 25, 26 to about 36, 37, I lost my apartment 8 times. I lost everything I had 8 times. I started over. And, you know, that's the way things ran for me, you know, that's what I did, you know, because I didn't really know much of anything else. And, I was very grateful for the fact that I was able to stop using cocaine on my own. Never did any meetings, never took any therapies, never did anything for it, you know, and I guess I'm pretty lucky for that fact because, I managed to stop on my own, and that was hard. Yet every time I went out to drink, it was always in the back of my mind. You know, that I was always playing that Russian roulette. Will I tonight? Will I? Won't? You know, it never really came about. Until my last drink, I'll bring it up to my mom. A couple along the way, I almost died a few times. I've been in 8 car accidents where alcohol and drugs have been involved. I passed out one night in bed with a lit cigarette. And if it wasn't for my friend banging on my door and my dog barking, I would have died. I woke up, my bed was on fire. And my apartment was full of smoke. Another time I almost died. I was on my second story balcony, reaching over to knock on the door to get my cigarettes for my buddy, downstairs. And I went head over heels off the second story balcony. And I landed with a thud. People 5 buildings away thought it was a car accident on my street. But it wasn't. It was just me hitting the ground. And I was off work for a year. And it took me 4 months of physiotherapy before I could pick up a penny off the floor. You know, and what did I learn from that? Well, if I'm drinking on a second story, just stand back from the railing. And if I'm smoking in bed, well, sit up. You know, basically it curbed my drinking, it curbed my using for a bit. But everything just continued to progress. I just picked up speed. And like I said, I was born and raised in the east end of Montreal. I lived most of my adult life until I was about 37 in Rosemont. And along the way, I've had issues with my father. I had issues with my mother. My mother was a person I loved to hate, the person I loved the most, and the person that enabled me to hurt myself for a long, long time. I loved her, I hated her, and yet, you know, we drank together, we partied together, and we fought. And then, you know, the typical pattern for when we fought is that we wouldn't talk about it the next day. We'd stuff it down until the next time where I had alcohol and somebody pissed me off and I'd go offside and I'd yell and I'd scream and I'd rant and I'd throw a temper tantrum, you know. When you're 6 foot and you're 200 plus pounds and you throw a temper tantrum, you know, stuff gets broken, people get scared. And along the way, you know, every time I took a drink, there was fear in people's eyes because you never knew what you were going to get. One day I'd be happy, go lucky, get ahead, be like reading a lunatic. And, you know, I caused a lot of pain and a lot of grief, you know. And I lived a life of lies, you know, making up stories to continue the insanity that I was on, the insane path that I was on. And I was at that point, when I was 37 years old, I was estranged from my father for a couple of years up to that point, because he didn't like the way I was talking to him and his wife. And I basically told him where to go. I told him to fuck off. If you don't like what I'm doing, you don't have to stay around. And when I was 37, my mother passed away, and a lot of things started to change for me. You know, I love my mother to death, you know, and when she passed away, you know, my security blanket went, you know, and I had to call my father and tell him that my mother passed away and everything like that. And it was one of the turning points in my life with my father that we started talking again because of the death of my mother. And that didn't stop me from continuing to hurt myself. When my mother passed away, I had a geographical cure. I moved from Rosemount to Longueuil, and I was living in Longueuil, and I made it one of those, you know, one of those promises that I was always famous for. I'm going to stop, I'm going to change this, I'm going to do a lot of things differently, you're going to see, and everything's going to be different. And, but once again, I did it for all the wrong reasons. I did it to appease other people. I did it to please the family, you know, show them that I could do this, show them that I could change. And for about 7 months, I stopped drinking, you know, which was pretty interesting. It was about the longest point at that time in my life that I was able to stop drinking. And but I was still using other things to accommodate, you know. If I was cutting down on one thing, another thing was increasing. If I was increasing on that one, my drinking would increase. You know, and so about 7 months after my mother passed away and I'm living in Longueuil, I decided to have a pool party. And got that brilliant idea, wouldn't it be nice to have a cold one? And needless to say, I had that one drink and had another. Then I had another. And by the end of the evening, I'm sitting on the floor in my apartment. I'm wrapped around some girl's leg. And she's trying to find a very polite way to extradite herself from me. You know, I'm hitting on her and I'm being a total ass. And I didn't give a shit. You know? And then from that point on, about a year, year and a half later, I'm at a bar in the East End. It's a Thursday. It's March the 8th, International Women's Day. I'm with the girl I'm seeing at the time. I'm also with the girl that I'm cheating with at the time, and a couple other people. I'm thirsty. And I finished work early, and I'm drinking, and we close that bar. It's close the tavern about La Brasserie, about 11:30. Then we go to the bar, and once I get into the bar, I know what I'm looking for, and I find what I'm looking for, and it enables me to continue on partying. And long story short, Thursday turned into Friday, went to an after-hours bar after we closed the club, continued partying most of the day Friday, and the rest kind of turns into a brownout. And by that time everything is said and done, it's Sunday, and I've spent a lot of money, I'm broke, I gotta go home and tell my buddy I can't beat her, man. Can't buy any food, can't even buy my bus pass. And needless to say, was not impressed. You know, and once again, when I woke up that morning, you know, I had that feeling of, I did it again. I screwed up again. Why do I always keep doing this to myself? You know, and throughout the course of my life, there's always been a lot of moves. You know, I haven't been in a stable place for a long, long time, living-wise. By the time I moved out when I was 17, moved back home, moved back out, moved back home, moved back out. You know, every time I lost my apartment, I was back to my mother's place. And, excuse me. And along the way, you know, every time I'm losing more and more respect for myself, and people are losing respect for me because I just can't seem to get my stuff together. Can't seem to take care of my responsibilities, you know. You know, I'm 38 years old. 39 years old when I came into 39 going on 40 when I came into the fellowship, and I was still irresponsible as I was when I was 17, 18 years old. And, you know, along the way, I hurt a lot of people, and I hurt myself a lot, you know. put a lot of strain at work, a lot of strain in every relationship I ever had. I don't think I've ever had an honest relationship with a girl, with a woman, when I was drinking. And, you know, I've never had a monogamous relationship. You know? And that's the way it was for me, you know. About 25 to 27 years of insanity. Drinking, partying, looking for the next high, looking for the next drink, looking for the next party. You know, and by the time I came to the fellowship, I didn't have any friends. Nobody wanted to be with me. Nobody wanted to hang out with me. And, you know, I was drinking in seedier and seedier places so I could feel better about myself because I had money in my pocket. And most of the people at the bars where I was hanging out were on welfare and stuff like that and didn't have a dime in their pocket. So I made myself look better than they were. And when I got home and I had to tell my roommate about the guy that I was renting the apartment that could have paid the rent, he was pretty pissed at me, you know. He said, when are you going to stop doing this? You know, when are you going to freaking grow up? And he says, you got a problem, you got to take care of that. And I gave him my famous answer, yeah, I'll work on that tomorrow, I'll take care of that tomorrow. I will procrastinate. Everything was tomorrow. You know, I'll pay you back tomorrow. I'll give you back your LPs. That makes me sound so old. I remember when we had LPs. I was like, but that, you know, it was always tomorrow. I'll take care of it tomorrow. Never had the courage to take care of things I could take care of today. And that's the way my life was for a long, long time. And March 11, 2001, I called the helpline for the first time and only time. And I talked to a fellow for about 40, 45 minutes, and he gave me the good sell, too. You know, he almost had me believing that I was a mess. You know, I had a problem. Because I could lie to myself and tell me everything was okay. Because, you know, that's what I was good at, lying to myself. Because I could tell myself anything to make myself feel good or to justify my drinking, my using, and my abuse of other people. And I didn't go to a meeting that night because I didn't want to. And for some reason, I said, oh, I'll go tomorrow. Give me a meeting and I'll go tomorrow. And he did. And for reasons I don't know today, I actually followed through. You know, I went home from work. I showered, I changed, and I left to go to this meeting, which turned out to be Tuesday Oasis and NDG. And that's where I took my big book and my first desire gym. And I was given a gift at my very first meeting. You know, it was only a couple of years after that I really realized I was given a gift. The urge to drink was taken away at my very first meeting. Yet, I was still doing other things because I couldn't stop everything all at once. You know, I was still on that marijuana maintenance program. You know, and 2 months later, I changed my sobriety date from March 12th to May 12th. And I haven't had a drink or a drug since then. You know, the hardest thing I've ever put in my system since then is maybe an aspirin or some antibiotics. And even then, I still don't like that. I still got that. I'm still hard-headed. I don't like to go see doctors. You know, I guess I have a fear of doctors. You know, I have a fear maybe they tell me something's wrong, or something's broken. You know, figuring out of sight, out of mind. And, you know, along the way, I hooked up with some pretty good people along the way. My first sponsor was used to come here sometimes. DW. A little short, arrogant little guy, about this tall with glasses. He was my sponsor for about the first 2 months of the fellowship, and I fired his ass because I caught the resemblance when I found out how old he was. Now, forget the fact that when I fired him, he was 23 years old, he had 7.5 years of sobriety. I just wasn't looking at that. You know, I caught the resemblance. I'm old, I had a drink here that's older than you are. How can you help me? You know, not even looking at the fact that he had 7.5 years of sobriety at that time. But through him, I was able to meet my second sponsor. And through him, you know, we connected on a level I haven't connected with very many people in my life. And through him, I was able to work the steps. I was in a workshop at the time, a 17-week men's intensive step workshop. And through him, I managed to go through and do my first fourth and fifth step. I went through my first full 12 steps, you know, working with the big book, working with others, and going through that process. you know, sitting down and doing my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, and, you know, dropping that big sack of crap that I carried on my back for such a long time, you know, and telling him stuff that even today, not too many people know. You know, and subsequently, every year since then, I've done a 17-week men's intensive step workshop. You know, I've done a lot of things for me to help me get better. And now I put on these 17-week men's intensive workshops. And I've got a commitment with another guy, and we're going to put one on in January. You know, it's a good way to start the year off, you know. And that's what I've done this past year. And everything was going really good for a couple of years, you know. And but I was hiding in sobriety. I was controlling what people were seeing in sobriety. I lived in Ville Saint-Pierre after I got off. The last time I lost my apartment, I was sober. My buddy kicked me out. And today, you know, when I get the courage to go back and face him, I'm going to have to thank him. Because when he threw me out of my ass, he forced me to do something that a lot of people waited a long time to see. Forced me to grow up. Forced me to start taking responsibility for my life. And forced me to start taking care of what any normal adult should be able to do. Pay bills, take care of your responsibilities, and try to be a productive member of society. And yet, everything was nice on the outside. What you're seeing at meetings and what was happening in my private life were different. They weren't the same. You know, there were times I'd have good days, yeah. And there were times when I was just freaking miserable. But I'd still be going to meetings, still working my steps. And one of the things I realized is that I held on to a lot of stuff, even after I did my first, fourth, and fifth step with my second sponsor. Now, right now, I'm working on my fifth sponsor. You know, and each time I've done a workshop, I've been more forthcoming. I've been letting go of a lot more. And there's not really much out there that can come back to bite me in the ass. And so at 4 years sober, I pulled a midnight move, stiffed my landlord. And, you know, when you do shady things, you're going to get burnt. And needless to say, 2005 was the year that my ass got toasted really, really nice. My salary got... I went to the World Convention in Toronto. Everything was really honky-dory. I was in such a really great space. Everything was going really good. I moved out of my lot. I pulled the midnight move. I'm out of my apartment. I'm living in this other really great place. You know, it's a nice house and everything like that. And things are going really, really good. Go to the World Convention in Toronto. Come back to Montreal, and then within 7 days, the fit hit the shan, and my life turned to crap. My salary got seized. Revenue Quebec was looking for me. Revenue Canada was looking for me. Hydro Quebec was looking for me. You know, everyone was looking for me, and I'm having problems with the place where I'm living. I'm not taking care of my responsibilities. You know, I'm 4.5 years sober. I'm still living irresponsibly. Fear of them opening up envelopes. I had a stack that I moved with me that I haven't freaking opened. You know? And reality check, life set in. And, you know, my roommate is angry at me because I'm not taking care of my responsibilities. They're hassling him. They're trying to find out information about me. And then, you know, I pick up the phone, I make the calls, and started taking care of my responsibilities. Started making arrangements to make payments. I found a guy to do my back taxes for me. I hadn't filed taxes in the last 5 years. And I took care of that, you know, and now I can honestly say there's nothing out there that can bother me anymore. You know, because now I'm above board, I'm taking care of my responsibilities. I am paying my bills on time. And, you know, it's been a long time coming, you know. And yet here I was 4.5 years sober, and I was still screwing up. But there's a big difference before and today. Today, you know what, I'll talk about it. I have to talk about it. I have to put it out there. And you know what, if you want to judge me, you know, that's okay. You know, there's one, for every finger pointing at me, there's always three pointing back at my accuser. And you know what, that's okay. You know, if you don't get anything from what I said tonight, that's okay too. You know, because I know what, it'll help one person tonight, you know, it'll probably help me. Because sometimes I have to hear myself speak to realize that, you know what, I still have a lot of work to go. You know, I still have a lot of things to do. I still have a lot of people to help. I still have a lot of people out there to help me. And, you know, along the way, I've met some really, really good people. You know, and today I actually have friends, honest friendships with people. You know, and there are times, even though it doesn't always work out, you know, and sometimes those friendships get strained. You know, at least I have the ability to take responsibility for my actions today, and if I've offended people today, I have the tools to say, I'm sorry, is there anything I can do to make this right? You know, and that has happened along the way. I've had to make a lot of amends. You know, I've had to say, I'm sorry, you know, and how can I make this right? You know, and that's a beautiful thing, because before I would never say I was sorry. You know, I'd rather eat a shit sandwich or, you know, not talk to you than say I was sorry. You know, and live with the guilt and the shame and the remorse and all those feelings inside. You know, today I can talk about my feelings. Today I'm more in tune to me than I've ever been in my life. You know, now, you know, I'm an emotional character sometimes. You know, even a sensitive, you know, commercial would get me all misty-eyed and stuff like that, but that's okay. Because when I was out there drinking and using, you know, I spent a lot of time detaching here, from here, you know, because where I was growing up, if you could show weakness, you'd be taken advantage of. And I didn't want to be taken advantage of. And today is a good day. You know, I'm in the midst of relationship problems. I'm in the midlife crisis. The only thing missing is a freaking sports car. I'm going to be making efforts to go back to school. I want to get my high school equivalency, and I want to study to become a chef. You know, and that's what I'm looking at doing for over the next couple of years. Because most of my adult life, you know, other than when I was in the army, I spent working in a schmottager in the garment industry. You know, and I just can't do it anymore. I've had it up to here. And it was with the 12 steps and with the program that, you know, I found the courage to jump off the deep end, you know, go where Barry's never gone before. You know, and that's back into a classroom after 35 years. You know, that's some scary shit. You know, but I'm willing to face that, and I'm willing to go through it, and because it's time for me to change. It's time for me to make that next move. And if I don't, you know, I'll just stay where I am, and I'm not going to be a happy person. You know, right now I'm afraid, but that's normal. You know, I'm a fear-based individual, but I'm facing these fears, and I'm trying to work through it with the program, talking to my sponsor. And, you know, I'm in the process of ending my relationship with somebody. And that's very difficult because I got attached very quickly to this person, and the person wasn't honest with me. And, you know, that's tough to go through, you know, and that. But the thing is, I have to step back, and she has her issues and her problems she's got to take care of. And I have to take care of my main priorities, my sobriety. You know, and over the last little bit, I put that in danger. I put myself in situations that I shouldn't have. You know, she was heavily using when I was there. And, you know, it's a miracle that I didn't pick up and use myself. And I have to walk away. You know, and that's one of the hardest things I ever had to do. You know, because one thing above all else, I'm ruthless with my sobriety, and that's got to come first. Above and beyond anything. You know, and the hard part about that is, you know, I got to tell myself the truth. And there are times I don't want to tell myself the truth because I don't like the answers that I have. I don't like the answers that I'm going to hear, and I don't like the actions that I have to take. But if I'm going to maintain my sobriety, and I'm going to continue to grow in this fellowship, these are things that I have to do. And it's with the 12 steps, with talking to my sponsor, going to meetings, and being with my fellow brothers and sisters in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can continue to stay sober today. And there's not much more I can add to that. And I'm not a long-winded speaker, you know. There are times I like to get out there and pontificate to the masses for 45 minutes, but I don't have 45 minutes of stuff to tell you. You know, I try to keep it under 25, 30 minutes. 30 minutes is long for me. And with that, I'm going to end with that. I'm going to wish you all a good day and a good 24. And if nobody's told you that you're loved today, let me be the first. Thank you. I love you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Barry.